But Mackie just smiled a cynical little smirk and then left. As soon as I was sure he was actually gone, he's the type who'd hang around eavesdropping in shrubberies. I went into Daniel and asked him what the fuck his problem was. He was still at the window. He hadn't moved. He pushed his hair off his face. He was sweating. And he said, "There isn't a problem. He's lying, of course. I should have realized that immediately, but he caught me off guard." I just stared at him. I thought he had finally lost it. "Or you have," Abby said crisply. "I don't remember any of this." "You and Justin were busy dancing around hugging each other and making squeaky noises like a pair of Teletubbies." Daniel gave me this irritated look and said, "Don't be naive, Rafe. If Mackie were telling the truth, do you honestly believe that would be unadulterated good news? Hasn't it even occurred to you just how serious the consequences could have been?" He took a long swallow of his drink. "You tell me, Abby. Does that sound overjoyed to you?"
"Jesus Christ, Rafe,"
Abby said. She was sitting up straight, eyes snapping. She was getting angry. "What are you babbling about? Are you losing your mind? Nobody wanted Lexi to die." "You didn't. I didn't. Justin didn't. Maybe Daniel didn't. All I'm saying is that I've got no way of knowing what he felt when he checked Lexi's pulse. I wasn't there. And I can't swear I know what he'd have done if he realized she was alive. Can you, Abby? After these last few weeks, can you swear, hand on heart, that you're absolutely positive what Daniel would have done?" Something cold slipped across the back of my neck, riffled the curtains, spiraled off to nose delicately in corners. All Cooper and the Bureau had been able to tell us was that she had been moved after she died, not how long after. For at least 20 minutes they had been alone together in the cottage, Lexi and Daniel. I thought of her fists, clenched tight. "Extreme emotional stress," Cooper had said. And then of Daniel sitting quietly beside her, carefully tapping ash into his smoke packet, droplets of soft rain catching in his dark hair. If there had been anything more than that, a hand twitching, a gasp, wide brown eyes staring up at him, a whisper almost too faint to hear, no one would ever know. Long night wind sweeping across the hillside, owl calls fading. The other thing Cooper had said, doctors could have saved her. Daniel could have made Justin stay in the cottage if he had really wanted to. It would have been the logical thing to do. The one who stayed had nothing to do, if Lexi was dead, except keep still and not touch anything. The one who went back to the house had to break the news to the others, find the wallet and the keys and the maglight, stay calm and work fast. Daniel had sent Justin, who could barely stand up. "Right up until the night before you came home," Rafe told me. "He insisted you were dead. According to him, the cops were just bluffing, claiming you were alive so we'd think you were talking to them. He said all we had to do was keep our heads and they'd back down sooner or later. They'd come up with some story about how you'd relapsed and died in hospital. It wasn't until Mackie phoned to ask if he could drop you off the next day, if we'd be home. That was when it hit Daniel that, duh, there might not actually be some huge conspiracy going on. This might actually be as simple as it looked. A light bulb moment." He took another big swig of his drink. "Overjoyed, my shiny white arse. I'll tell you what he was. He was petrified. All he could think about was whether Lexi had really lost her memory or whether she'd just said that to the cops and what she might do about it once she got home." "So?" Abby demanded. "Big deal. We were all worried about that, if we're honest. Why not? If she did remember, she'd have had every right to be raging with the lot of us. That evening you came home, Lex, we'd been like a bunch of cats on hot bricks all day. Once we realized you weren't angry or anything, we were okay. But when you got out of that cop car, Jesus, I thought my head was going to explode." For one last second, I saw them again the way I had that evening. a golden apparition on the front steps, shining and poised, like young warriors stepped out of some lost myth, heads lifted, too bright to be real.
Worried, Rafe said. Yes. But Daniel was a lot more than worried. He was so hysterically nervous that it was making me nervous too. Finally, I cornered him. I had to sneak up to his room late at night like we were having an affair or something. He was bloody careful not to let me get him alone. And I asked him what the hell was up. Do you know what he said to me? He said, we have to accept the fact that this may not be over so easily. I think I have a plan that should cover all eventualities, but a few of the details are still unclear. Try not to worry about it for the moment. It may never come to that. What do you suppose he meant by that?
Not being a mind reader, Abby said crisply. I haven't a clue. I assume he was trying to reassure you.
A dark lane, and a tiny click. And that note in Daniel's voice, focused, absorbed, so calm. I could feel my hair lifting. It had never occurred to me, not once, that the gun might not have been pointing at Naylor.
Rafe snorted. Oh, please. Daniel didn't give a damn about how any of us felt, including Lexi. All he cared about was finding out whether she remembered anything and what she was going to do next. He wasn't even subtle about it. He was blatantly pumping her for information, every chance he got. Do you remember what route you took that night? Are you taking the jacket, or would you rather not? Oh, Lexi, do you want to talk about it? It made me sick. He was trying to protect you, Rafe. Us.
I don't need protecting, thanks very much. I'm not a bloody child, and I definitely, definitely don't need protecting by Daniel.
Well, good for you, said Abby. Congratulations, big man. Whether you feel you needed it or not, he was doing his best. If that's not good enough for you.
Rafe gave a jerky one-shouldered shrug. Maybe he was. Like I said, I've got no way to know for sure. But if he was, then his best is pretty crap for such a smart guy. These last few weeks have been hell, Abby, living hell, and they didn't need to be. If Daniel had just listened to us instead of doing his best... We wanted to tell you, he said, swinging around to me. All three of us, when we found out you were coming home.
We really did, Lexi, said Justin, leaning over the arm of his chair towards me. You don't know how many times I almost... God, I thought I was going to explode or disintegrate or something if I didn't tell you.
But Daniel, Rafe said, wouldn't let us. And look how well that's turned out. Look how well every single one of his ideas has turned out. Look at us, where he's got us.
His hand flying up to all of us, to the room bright and desperate and cracking at the seams.
None of this needed to happen. We could have called an ambulance, we could have told Lexi straight off.
No, Abby said. No, you could have called an ambulance. You could have told Lexi. Or I could have. Or Justin. Don't you dare put this all on Daniel. You're a grown man, Rafe. Nobody held a gun to your head and made you keep your mouth shut. You did it all by yourself.
Maybe. But I did it because Daniel told me to, and so did you. You and I were on our own here for how long that night? An hour? More? And the only thing you could talk about was how badly you wanted to get help. But when I said, yeah, okay, let's do it, you said no. Daniel said not to do anything. Daniel had a plan. Daniel would handle it.
Because I trust him. I owe him that much at least, and so do you.
This, everything we have got, it's because of Daniel. If it weren't for him, I'd be on my own in a scary underground bedsit right this minute. Maybe that doesn't mean anything to you.
Rafe laughed a loud, harsh, startling sound.
This fucking house, he said. Every time anyone hints that your precious Daniel might not be perfect, you throw the house in our faces. I've been keeping my mouth shut because I thought maybe you were right. Maybe I owed him. But now, I've just about had it up to my tits with this house. Another of Daniel's brilliant ideas. And how well has this one worked out? Justin's a wreck. You're 6 feet deep in denial. I'm drinking like my father. Lexi almost died. And most of the time, we all hate one another's guts. All because of this fucking house. Abby's head came up and she stared at him. That's not Daniel's fault. He just wanted...
Wanted what, Abby? What? Why do you think he gave us all shares in the house to start with?
Because, Abby said low and dangerous, he cares about us. Because right or wrong, he figured this was the best way to make sure all five of us were happy.
I expected Rafe to laugh out loud at that too, but he didn't.
You know, he said after a moment, staring down into his glass. I thought that too, at first. I really did. But he was doing it, because he loved us.
The vicious edge had fallen out of his voice. All that was left was a simple, tired melancholy.
It made me happy, thinking that. There was a time when I would have done anything for Daniel.
Anything.
Then you saw the light, Abby said. Her voice was hard and brittle, but she couldn't keep the shake out of it. She was more upset than I'd ever seen her. More upset than when I'd brought up the note in the jacket. Someone who gives his best friends most of a seven-figure house is obviously doing it for purely selfish reasons. Paranoid much?
I thought about that. I've thought about this a lot, the last few weeks. I didn't want to. God. But I couldn't help it. Like picking at a scab.
Rafe looked up at Abby, shaking his hair out of his face. The booze was soaking in and his eyes were bloodshot and puffy, as if he had been crying.
Say we'd all ended up in different colleges, Abby. Say we'd never met. What do you think we'd be doing now?
I don't have the foggiest clue what you're talking about.
We'd be okay, the four of us. Maybe we would have had a tough first few months. Maybe it would have taken us a while to get to know people, but we'd have done it. I know none of us were the outgoing type, but we'd have learned. That's what people do in college. They learn to function in the big scary world. By now we'd have friends, social lives.
I wouldn't, Justin said quietly and definitely. I wouldn't be okay. Not without you guys.
Yes, you would, Justin. You would. You'd have a boyfriend.
You too, Abby. Not just someone who shares a bed with you occasionally, when the day's been too much to take. A boyfriend. A partner.
He gave me a sad little smile.
You, silly thing. I'm not so sure. But you'd be having a lot of fun either way.
Thanks for sorting out our love lives. Abby said coldly.
You patronizing prick. The fact that Justin doesn't have a fella doesn't make Daniel the Antichrist.
Rafe didn't rise to that, and for some reason, that frightened me.
No, he said. But think about this for a second. If we'd never met, what do you think Daniel would be doing now?
Abby gave him a blank stare.
Climbing the Matterhorn, running for office, living right here, how the hell do I know?
Can you see him going to the Freshers' Ball, joining college societies, chatting up some girl in American poetry class? Seriously, Abby, I'm asking, can you?
I don't know. It's all if, Rafe. If doesn't mean anything. I've got no idea what would have happened if everything had gone differently, because I'm not bloody clairvoyant, and neither are you.
Maybe not. Rafe said, but I know this much. Daniel would never, no matter what, never have learned how to deal with the outside world. I don't know if he was born this way or if he was dropped on his head as a baby or what, but he's just not capable of living a normal human life.
There's nothing wrong with Daniel, Abby said, cold, fine syllables like chips of ice splintering. Nothing.
There is, Abby.
I love him. Yes, I do. I still do. But there's always been something wrong with him. Always. You have to know that.
He's right, Justin said softly. There has?
I never told you, but back when we first met, back in first year...
Shut up!
Abby snapped viciously, whirling on him. You shut your mouth. What makes you any different? If Daniel's fucked up, then you're just as fucked up as he is, and you, Rafe.
No, Rafe said. He stared down at his finger tracing patterns in the condensation on his glass.
That's what I'm trying to tell you. The rest of us. When we want to, we can hold conversations with other people, for God's sake. I picked up a girl the other night. Your tutorial brats love you. Justin flirts with that blonde guy who works in the library. You do, Justin, I've seen you. Lexi had a laugh with the people in that awful cafe. We can connect with the rest of the world if we put in the effort. But Daniel, there are only 4 people on the planet who don't think he's a full-on freak show, and all 4 of them are in this room. We'd have been okay without him, one way or another. But he wouldn't have been okay without us. If it weren't for us, Daniel would be lonelier than God.
So? Abby demanded after a long second.
So what?
So, Rafe said.
If you ask me, that's why he gave us shares in the house. Not to make our lives all sunshiny. To have company here in his private universe, to keep us for good.
You, Abby said. She was breathless. You nasty-minded little piece of work. Where you get the sheer brass neck?
It was never us he was protecting, Abby. Never. It was this. His own ready-made little world. Tell me this. Why did you ride into the cop shop with Daniel this morning? Why didn't you want him to be alone with Lexi?
I didn't want to be anywhere near you. The way you've been acting, you make me sick.
Bullshit. What do you think he was going to do to Lexi? If she even hinted that she might still sell up, or talk to the cops. You keep saying I could have told her any time, but what do you think Daniel would have done to me if he thought I was going to step out of line? He had a plan, Abby. He told me he had a plan to cover all eventualities. What the hell do you think his plan was?
Justin gasped, a terrified, childlike sound. The light in the room had changed. The air had tilted, pressure shifting. All those little eddies gathering themselves together and whirling around some huge focal point. Daniel filled the doorway, tall and unmoving, hands in the pockets of his long dark coat. All I ever wanted, he said quietly, was here, in this house.
Chapter 24.
Daniel, Abby said, and I saw her whole body loosen with relief.
Thank God.
Rafe eased back slowly on the sofa.
Cute entrance, he said coldly.
How long have you been listening at the door? Daniel didn't move.
What have you told her?
She was remembering anyway, Justin said. His voice was shaking.
Didn't you hear? In the police station. If we didn't tell her the rest, she was going to ring them and...
Ah, Daniel said. His eyes went to me, one small, expressionless flick, and then away again.
I should have guessed. How much did you tell her?
She was upset, Daniel, said Abby. Stuff was coming back to her. She was having a hard time dealing with it. She needed to know. We told her what happened. Not who, you know, did it, but the rest.
It was a highly educational conversation, Rafe said. All round.
Daniel took this in with a brief nod.
All right, he said. Here's what we're going to do. Everyone's emotions are running high.
Rafe rolled his eyes and made a disgusted noise. Daniel ignored him.
And I don't think there's anything to be gained by continuing this discussion right now. Let's leave it for a few days. Really leave it. While the dust settles and we take in what's happened. Then we can talk about it again.
Once I and my Mike were out of the house, before I could say anything, Rafe asked,
Why?
Something in the roll of his head, the slow lift of his eyelids, as he turned to stare at Daniel, it hit me, with a vague, shapeless warning, just how drunk he was. I saw Daniel realize the same thing.
If you'd prefer not to resurrect it, he said coolly. Believe me, that's fine with me. I'd be delighted never to have to think about this again.
No,
Why leave it?
I told you, because I don't think any of us are in any state to discuss this rationally. It's been an excruciatingly long day.
What if I don't give a fuck what you think?
I am asking you, Daniel said, to trust me. I don't often ask you for anything. Please do me this favor.
Actually, Rafe said, you've asked us to do a lot of trusting you this last while. He put down his glass on the table with a sharp little click.
Possibly I have, said Daniel.
For a fraction of a second he looked exhausted, drained to the last drop, and I wondered how exactly Frank had kept him for so long, what they had talked about, the two of them alone in a room.
So a few more days can't really do that much harm, can they?
And you were listening, behind that door, like some gossip-starved housewife for long enough to work out exactly how far I trust you. What are you afraid will happen if we keep talking about this? Are you afraid Lexi won't be the only one who wants to leave? What will you do then, Daniel? How many of us are you prepared to kill off?
Daniel's right, Abby said crisply. Daniel coming home had calmed her down. Her voice sounded strong again, certain.
All our heads are wrecked. We're not making sense in a few days' time. On the contrary, said Rafe, I think I may be making sense for the first time in years.
Leave it, said Justin, barely above a whisper. Please, Rafe, leave it.
Rafe didn't even hear him. You can believe every word he says is gospel, Abby. You can come running when he snaps his fingers. You think he cares that you're in love with him. He doesn't give a damn. He'd get rid of you in a heartbeat if he had to, just like he was ready to.
Abby finally lost her temper.
Fuck you, you self-righteous bloody...
She shot up off her chair and fired the doll straight at Rafe, one fast, vicious move. He threw up a forearm reflexively and smashed it away into a corner.
I warned you. What about you? Using Justin when you need him. You think I didn't hear him going downstairs that night? Your bedroom's under mine, genius. And then when you don't need him, you treat him like shit, break his heart over and over and... Stop it! Justin shouted. His eyes were squeezed tight and his hands were pressed over his ears. His face looked like he was in agony.
God, stop it! Stop!
Daniel said. That's enough.
His voice was starting to rise.
It's not! I yelled, loud enough to cut straight across everyone.
I'd been so quiet the last while, letting them run with it and waiting for my moment, that all of them shut up and whipped round to look at me, blinking, as if they'd almost forgotten I was there.
It's not enough. I don't want to leave it.
Why not? Daniel inquired. He had his voice back under control. That perfect, immovable calm had slammed down across his face the instant I opened my mouth. I would have thought you, of all people, Lexi, would want to get back to normal as quickly as possible. It's not like you to obsess over the past.
I want to know who stabbed me. I need to know.
Those cool, curious grey eyes examining me with detached interest.
Why?
He repeated.
It's over. After all, we're all still here. There's been no permanent harm done, has there?
Your arsenal, Frank had said. The lethal last resort grenade Lexi had left me. Passed from her hand to Cooper's to mine. The jewel-colored flash in the dark, bright and then gone. The tiny switch that had set all this in motion. My throat closed up tight till it ached even to breathe, and I shouted through it.
I was pregnant!
They all stared at me. It was so quiet all of a sudden, and their faces were so absolutely still and blank. I thought they hadn't understood.
I was going to have a baby,
I said. I felt lightheaded. Maybe I was swaying on my feet. I don't know. I didn't remember standing up. The sun streaming across the room turned the air a strange, wholly impossible gold.
It died.
Silence still. That's not true, Daniel said.
But he wasn't even looking to see how the others had taken it. His eyes were fixed on me. "It is," I said. "Daniel, it is."
"No,"
said Justin. His breath was coming as if he had been running.
"Oh, Lexi, no, please."
"It's true," Abby said. She sounded terribly tired. "I knew before any of this even happened." Daniel's head tipped back, just a fraction. His lips parted, and he let out a long breath, soft and immensely sad. Rafe said softly, almost gently, "You bastard fuck." He was standing up in slow motion, with his hands curled in front of him as if they were frozen there. For a second, taking in what that meant. My money had been on Daniel, no matter what he claimed to Abby. Used up all my mind. It was only when Rafe said again, louder, "You fuck," that I realized he wasn't talking to Daniel. Daniel, still framed in the doorway, was behind Justin's chair. Rafe was talking to Justin.
"Rafe," Daniel said, very sharply. "Shut up, now. Sit down and pull yourself together."
It was the worst possible thing he could have done. Rafe's fists snapped closed. He was bone white and his top lip was pulled back in a snarl, and his eyes were gold and mindless as a lynx's.
"Don't you ever," he said low. "Don't you ever tell me what to do again. Look at us. Look at what you've done. Are you pleased with yourself? Are you happy now? If it hadn't been for you..."
"Rafe," Abby said, "listen to me. I know you're upset." "My, oh God, that was my child. Dead. Because of him."
"I told you to be quiet," Daniel said, and there was something dangerous growing in his voice.
Abby's eyes flicked to me, intent and urgent. I was the only one Rafe would listen to. If I had gone to him then, put my arms around him, made this into his and Lexi's private grief instead of a public war, I could have ended it there. He would have had no choice. For a second I could feel it, strong as reality. His shoulders slackening against me, his hands coming up to circle me tight, his shirt warm and clean smelling against my face. I didn't move.
"You," Rafe said, to Daniel or to Justin, I couldn't tell which. "You!"
In my memory, it happened so neatly, clean, distinct steps, as if it had been choreographed to perfection. Maybe that's just because I had to tell the story so many times. To Frank, Sam, O'Kelly, over and over to the internal affairs investigators. Maybe it wasn't like that at all. But the way I remember it, this is what happened. Rafe went for Justin or Daniel or both. A straight headlong charge like a fighting stag's. His leg hit the table and it toppled. High arcs of liquid glittering through the air. Bottles and glasses rolling everywhere. Rafe caught himself with a hand on the floor and kept going. I got in front of him and grabbed his wrist, but he threw me off with one huge fling of his arm. My feet slid on spilled vodka, and I went down hard. Justin was up and out of his chair, hands outstretched to keep Rafe off, but Rafe slammed into him full force, and they both crashed back onto the chair, skidding backwards, Justin letting out a terrified moan, Rafe on top and scrabbling for traction. Abby got one hand twisted in his hair and the other in his shirt collar and tried to haul him off. Rafe shouted and heaved her away. He had his fist pulled back to punch Justin in the face. I was coming up off the floor and somehow Abby had a bottle in her hand. Then I was on my feet and Rafe had leapt backwards off Justin and Abby was pressed against the wall, as if we had been blown apart by a bomb blast. The house was frozen, stunned into silence. The only sound was all of us breathing hard, fast gasps.
"There," Daniel said. "That's better."
He had moved forwards into the sitting room. There was a dark gash in the ceiling above him. A trickle of plaster fell onto the floorboards with a light pattering sound. He was holding the World War I Webley in both hands, easily, like someone who knew how to use it. He had it trained on me. "Drop that now," I said. My voice came out loud enough that Justin let out a wild little whimper. Daniel's eyes met mine and he shrugged, one eyebrow going up ruefully. He looked lighter and looser than I had ever seen him. He almost looked relieved. We both knew. That bang had flown down the mic straight to Frank and Sam. Inside 5 minutes the house would be surrounded by cops with guns that made Uncle Simon's Banjax revolver look like a kid's toy. There was nothing left to hold on to. Daniel's hair was falling in his eyes, and I swear he was smiling.
"Lexi?"
said Justin, a high, incredulous breath. I followed his eyes, down to my side. My sweater was rucked up, showing the bandage and the girdle, and I had my gun in my hands. I didn't remember pulling it out.
"What the hell?"
said Rafe, panting and wild-eyed.
"Lexi, what the hell?"
Abby said. "Daniel."
"Shh," he said gently. "It's all right, Abby."
"Where the hell did you get that, Lexi?"
"Daniel, listen." Sirens somewhere far off in the lanes, more than one.
"The cops," Abby said. "Daniel, the cops followed you."
Daniel pushed his hair out of his face with the back of a wrist.
"I doubt it's that simple," he said. "But yes, they're on their way. We don't have long."
"You need to put that away," Abby said. "Right now, you too, Lexi, if they see those..."
"Again," Daniel said. "It's not that simple."
He was right behind Justin's chair, the high-backed armchair. It and Justin, petrified, staring, hands clamped on the armrests, shielded him to chest height. Above them was the barrel of the gun, small and dark and wicked, pointed straight at me. The only clear shot I had was a headshot.
"She's right, Daniel," I said.
I couldn't even try to take cover behind a chair, not with all these civilians in the room. As long as he had the gun on me, it wasn't on them.
"Put it away. How do you think this is going to end best? If the police find us all sitting here peacefully waiting for them, or if they have to bring in a full SWAT team?"
Justin tried to get up, feet scrabbling limply at the floorboards. Daniel took a hand off the gun and shoved him down hard into the chair.
"Stay there," he said. "You're not going to get hurt. I got you into this. I'll get you out."
"What do you think you're doing?" Rafe demanded. "If you have some idea about all of us going down in a blaze of glory, you can stick it."
"Be quiet," said Daniel.
"Put down yours," I said, "and I'll put down mine, okay?"
In the second when Daniel's attention went to me, Rafe made a grab at his arm. Daniel sidestepped, fast and neatly, and elbowed him in the ribs without ever taking the gun off me. Rafe doubled over with a rough whoosh of breath.
"If you do that again," Daniel said, "I'll have to shoot you in the leg. I need to get this done, and I don't have time to deal with your distractions. Sit down."
Rafe collapsed on the sofa.
"You're insane," he said, between painful wheezes. "You have to know you're insane."
"Please," Abby said. "They're coming, Daniel, Lexi, please."
The sirens were getting closer, a dull clang of metal booming off the hillsides. Daniel had closed the gates, and someone's car had just rammed them open.
"Lexi,"
Daniel said, very clearly for the mic. His glasses were slipping down his nose, but he didn't seem to notice.
"I was the one who stabbed you. As the others will have told you, it wasn't premeditated."
"Daniel,"
Abby said, high and twisted and breathless.
"Don't do this."
I don't think he heard her.
"The argument broke out," he told me. "It turned into a fight, and honestly, I don't remember exactly how it happened. I had been doing the washing up. I had a knife in my hand. I was terribly upset at the thought that you wanted to sell your share of the house. I'm sure you can understand that. I wanted to hit you, and I did, with consequences that none of us ever, for one moment, could have foreseen. I'm sorry for any and every wrong I did you. All of you."
Screech of brakes, rush of pebbles scattering, the sirens howling and mindless outside.
Put it down, Daniel, I said.
He had to know that I only had a headshot, that I couldn't miss.
It'll be okay. We'll sort everything out. I swear we will. Just put it down.
Daniel looked around at the others. Abby poised, ready and helpless. Rafe hunched, glaring on the sofa. Justin twisted round to stare up at him with huge, frightened eyes.
Shh,
he said to them, and put a finger to his lips. I had never seen that much love and tenderness and incredible urgency in anyone's face, ever. Not one word, no matter what. They stared at him. It'll be all right, he said. Really, it will. It's going to be fine. He was smiling. Then he turned to me and his head moved, a tiny private nod I'd seen a thousand times before. Me and Rob, eyes catching across a door that wouldn't open, an interview room table, and that almost invisible nod passing between us. Go. It took so long. Daniel's free hand coming up in slow motion, a long fluid arc to brace the gun, an immense underwater silence filling the room. All the sirens had fallen away. Justin's mouth was stretched wide, but I couldn't hear anything coming out. The only sound in the world was the flat click of Daniel cocking the revolver. Abby's hands going out to him, starfished, her hair swinging up. I had so much time. Time to see Justin's head going towards his knees and to swing my gun down to the chest shot opening up. Time to watch Daniel's hands tightening around the Webley and to remember what they had felt like on my shoulders, those hands, big and warm and capable. I had time to recognize this feeling from so long ago, remember the acrid smell of panic off Dealer Boy, the steady rush of blood between my fingers, the realization of how easy it was, bleeding to death, how simple, how effortless. Then the world exploded. I read somewhere that the last word on every crashed airplane's black box, the last thing the pilot says when he knows he's about to die, is Mammy. When all the world and all your life are ripping away from you at the speed of light, that's the one thing that stays yours. It terrified me. The thought that if someday a suspect got a knife to my throat, if my life shrank to one split second, there might be nothing left inside me to say, no one to call. But what I said, small in the hair-thin silence between Daniel's shot and mine, was Sam. Daniel didn't say a word. The impact sent him staggering backwards, and the gun dropped from his hand, hit the floor with an ugly thud. Somewhere broken glass was falling, a sweet, impervious tinkle. I thought I saw a hole like a cigarette burn in his white shirt, but I was looking at his face. There was no pain on it, no fear, nothing like that. He didn't even look startled. His eyes were focused on something. I'll never know what. Behind my shoulder. He looked like a steeplechaser or a gymnast, landing perfectly out of the final death-defying leap, intent, tranquil, gone past every limit, holding back nothing. Certain.
No!
Abby said, flat and final as an order. Her skirt fluttered gay in the sunlight as she leaped for him. Then Daniel blinked and crumpled sideways, slowly. And there was nothing behind Justin except a clean, white wall. Chapter 25. The next few minutes are shreds of nightmare spliced together with great blank patches. I know I ran, slid on fallen glass and kept running, trying to get to Daniel. I know Abby crouched over him, fought like a cat to keep me off, wild-eyed, clawing. I remember blood smeared down her t-shirt, the boom echoing through the house as someone broke the front door open, men's voices shouting, feet pounding, hands under my arms pulling me back. I twisted and kicked till they gave me a hard shake, and my eyes cleared and I recognized Frank's face close to mine. Cassie, it's me, stop, relax, it's over. Sam shoving him away, his hands rough with panic all over me, checking for bullet holes, fingers coming away, bloody. Is that yours? Is that yours? I didn't know. Sam turning me, grabbing at me, his voice finally sagging with relief. You're grand.
You're okay.
He missed. Someone said something about the window. Someone sobbing. Too much light. Colors so bright you could cut yourself. Too many voices. Ambulance, get in. Finally, someone steered me out front and into a marked car, slammed the door. I sat there for a long time looking at the cherry trees, at the quiet sky slowly dimming, at the distant dark curves of the hills. I didn't think about anything at all. There are procedures for this, for officer-involved shootings. There are procedures for everything in the force. Going carefully unmentioned till the day they're needed at last, and the keeper turns the rusty key, blows dust off the file. I had never met a cop who had shot anyone. There was no one who could have told me what to expect, or how to do this, or that it was all going to be okay. Byrne and Doherty got stuck taking me to headquarters in Phoenix Park, where internal affairs work in showroom offices and a thick puffy cloud of defensiveness. Byrne drove. The slump of his shoulders said, clear as a voice balloon coming out of his head, I knew something like this would happen. I sat in the back like a suspect, and Doherty tried to be surreptitious about watching me in the rearview mirror. He was practically drooling. This was probably the most exciting thing that had ever happened to him. Plus, gossip is good currency in our world, and he had just won the lottery. My legs were so cold I could barely move them. I was cold right down to my bones, as if I'd fallen into a freezing lake. At every traffic light, Byrne stalled the car and swore morosely. Everyone hates IA, the rat squad, people call them, the Quislings, various other less flattering things. But they were good to me that day, at least. They were detached and professional, and very gentle, like nurses going through their expert rituals around some patient who had been in a terrible disfiguring accident. They took my badge. For the duration of the investigation, someone said soothingly. It felt like they had shaved my head. They peeled off the bandage and unclipped the mic. They took my gun like evidence, which of course it was, careful latex fingers dropping it into an evidence bag, sealing it, labeling it with neat marker strokes. A bureau tech with her hair in a smooth brown bun like a Victorian maid's stuck a needle in my arm, deftly, and took a blood sample to test for alcohol and drugs. I remembered, vaguely, Rafe pouring and the smooth cool of the glass, but I couldn't remember taking even one sip, and I thought this had to be a good thing. She swabbed my hands for gunshot residue, and I noticed, as if I were watching someone else from a long way away, that my hands weren't shaking. They were rock steady, and that a month of Whitethorn House cooking had softened the hollows by my wrist bones. There, the tech said comfortingly, quick and painless. But I was busy staring at my hands, and it wasn't till hours later when I was sitting on a neutral-colored lobby sofa under innocuous art, waiting for someone to come take me somewhere else, that I realized where I'd heard that tone before. Out of my own mouth. Not to victims, not to families. To the others. To men who'd left their wives half-blinded. To women who'd scalded their toddlers with boiling water. To killers. In the light-headed disbelieving moments after everything came pouring out. I had said in that infinitely gentle voice, It's okay. You're okay. Breathe. The worst part's over. Outside the lab window, the sky had gone black. A tainted rusty black smeared orange with city lights, and there was a thin breakable moon riding low among the treetops in the park. A shiver rocked my spine like a long cold wind. Cop cars speeding through Glenskeehy and then away again. John Naylor's eyes pure with rage and night coming down hard. I wasn't supposed to talk to Sam or Frank, not till all of us had been interviewed. I told the tech I had to go to the bathroom, and gave her a woman-to-woman look to explain why I was taking my jacket with me. In the cubicle, I flushed the jacks, and while the water was still running, everything about IA makes you paranoid. The thick carpets, the hush. I texted Frank and Sam, fast. Someone needs to keep an eye on the house.
I set my phone to silent and sat on the toilet lid, smelling sick fake flower air freshener and waiting. For as long as I could get away with. But neither of them answered. Their phones were probably off. They would be doing furious full-on interviewing of their own, expertly juggling Abby and Rafe and Justin between them, having quick undertone conferences in corridors, asking questions over and over again with relentless, ferocious patience. Maybe, my heart flicked upwards, punched at the base of my throat. Maybe. One of them was at the hospital, talking to Daniel. White face, IV lines, people in scrubs moving fast. I tried to remember exactly where the bullet had hit him. Ran through it over and over in my head, but the film blinked and stuttered, and I couldn't see. A tiny nod. The leap of his gun barrel, recoil slamming up my arms. Those grave, grey eyes, pupils only a little dilated. Then there was just Abby's voice, flat and adamant, "No." The blank wall where Daniel had been standing, and silence, huge and roaring in my ears. The tech handed me back to the IA guys, and they told me that if I was feeling a little shaken up, I could wait till the next day to give my statement. But I said no. Thanks. I was fine. They explained to me that I had the right to have a lawyer or a union rep present. And I said no. Thanks. I was fine. Their interview room was smaller than ours. Barely room to push your chair back from the table. And cleaner. No graffiti. No cigarette burns in the carpet. No gouges in the walls where someone had gone alpha gorilla with a chair. Both of the IA guys looked like cartoon accountants. Grey suits, bald spots, no lips, matching rimless glasses. One of them leaned against the wall behind my shoulder. Even if you know all the tactics inside out, they still work on you. And the other one sat across from me. He adjusted his notebook fussily so that it lined up with the edge of the table, turned on his tape recorder, and did the preliminary spiel.
"Now," he said, "in your own words, detective."
"Daniel March," I said. They were the only words that would come out. "Is he going to be all right?" And I knew, even before he told me. I knew when his eyelids flickered and his eyes slid away from mine. The bureau tech, her name was Gillian, drove me home sometime late that night when the IA twins had finished taking my statement. I told them what you'd expect, the truth, as well as I could put it into words. Nothing but the truth. Not the whole truth. No, I didn't feel that I'd had any option except to fire my weapon. No, I had had no opportunity to attempt a non-lethal disabling shot. Yes, I had believed my life was in danger. No, there had been no prior indication that Daniel was dangerous. No, he hadn't been our prime suspect. Long list of reasons, why not? It took me a second to remember them. They felt so long ago and far away, part of a different life. No, I didn't believe it had been remiss of me or Frank or Sam to leave a gun in the house. It was standard undercover practice to leave illegal materials in place for the duration of the investigation. We had had no way to remove it without blowing the whole operation. Yes, in retrospect, that decision did appear to have been unwise. They told me we'd talk again soon. They made it sound like a threat, and set up an appointment for me with the shrink, who was going to just about wet his polyester blend over this one. Gillian needed my clothes, Lexi's clothes, to test for gunshot residue. She stood at the door of my flat, hands folded, watching me while I changed. She had to be sure that what she saw was what she got. No switching out the t-shirt for a clean one. My own clothes felt cold and too stiff, like they didn't belong to me. The flat was cold too. It had a faint, dank smell, and there was a thin film of dust on all the surfaces. Sam hadn't come by in a while. I gave Gillian my clothes and she folded them away, efficiently, in big evidence bags. At the door she hesitated, hands full. For the first time she looked unsure, and I realized she was probably younger than me. "Are you going to be all right on your own?" she asked. "I'm fine," I said.
I had said it enough times that day that I was thinking of getting a t-shirt printed.
Is there anyone who could come stay with you?
I'll ring my boyfriend, I said. He'll come over. Even though I wasn't sure that was true, I wasn't sure at all. When Gillian left carrying the last of Lexi Madison, I sat on my windowsill with a glass of brandy. I hate brandy, but I was pretty sure I was officially in shock about four different ways, and besides it was the only booze in the flat. And watched the lighthouse beam blinking, serene and regular as a heartbeat, out over the bay. It was some ungodly hour of the night, but I couldn't imagine sleeping. In the faint yellow light from my bedside lamp, the futon looked vaguely threatening, overstuffed with squashy heat and bad dreams. I wanted to ring Sam so badly it was like being dehydrated, but I didn't have anything left inside me to handle it. Not that night, if he didn't answer. Somewhere far away a house alarm screamed briefly, till someone switched it off and the silence swelled up again and hissed at me. Off to the south the lights of Dunleary Pier were strung out neat as Christmas lights. Beyond them, I thought I saw for a second, trick of the eyes, the silhouette of the Wicklow Mountains against the dark sky. There were only a few stray cars passing down the Strand Road that time of night. The smooth sweeps of their headlights grew and faded, and I wondered where those people were going, late and solitary, what they were thinking about in the warm bubbles of their cars, what delicate, hard-won, irreplaceable layers of lives were wrapped around them. I don't think about my parents much. I've only got a handful of memories, and I don't want them wearing away. Textures rubbing smooth, colors fading from overexposure. When I take them out, once in a blue moon, I need them bright enough to catch my breath and sharp enough to cut. That night, though, I spread them all on the windowsill like frail pictures cut from tissue paper, and went through them, one by one. My mother, a nightlight shadow on the side of my bed, just a slim waist and a ponytailed fall of curls, a hand on my forehead and a smell I've never found anywhere else, and a low, sweet voice singing me to sleep.
A la clare fontena, mo alon promene, j'ai trouvé l'eau si belle que je me suis baigné.
She was younger then than I am now. She never made 30. My father sitting on a green hill with me and teaching me to tie my shoelaces, his worn brown shoes, his strong hands with a scrape on one knuckle, taste of cherry ice pop on my mouth, and both of us giggling at the mess I made. The three of us lying on the sofa under a duvet, watching Bagpuss on TV, my father's arms holding us together in a big warm tangled bundle, my mother's head nudged under his chin, and my ear on his chest so I could feel the buzz of his laugh in my bones. My mother putting on her makeup on her way out to a gig, me sprawled on their bed watching her, and twisting the duvet cover around my thumb and asking, "How did you find Daddy?" And her smiling in the mirror, a small private smile into her own smoky eyes. "I'll tell you that story when you're older, when you've got a little girl of your own, someday." The sky was just starting to turn grey, far out over the horizon, and I was wishing I had a gun to take to the firing range, and wondering whether a really serious swig of brandy would let me doze off on the windowsill, when my buzzer rang. A tiny, tentative flick of a ring. So quick I thought I'd imagined it. It was Sam. He didn't take his hands out of his coat pockets, and I didn't touch him.
"I didn't want to wake you," he said, "but I figured if you were awake anyway."
"I can't sleep," I said. "How did it go?"
"Like you'd expect. They're in bits, they hate our guts, and they'll be giving us nothing."
"Yeah," I said. "I figured that."
"Are you all right?"
"I'm fine," I said, automatically. He glanced around the room. Too tidy, no plates in the sink, futon still folded up, and blinked hard, like his eyelids were scratchy.
That text you sent me, he said. I did get on to Byrne, soon as I found the message. He said he'd keep an eye on the place, but you know what he's like. All he did was drive by when he got around to it, on his night round.
Something gauzy and dark swept up behind me, looming, trembling at my shoulder like a great cat ready to pounce. John Naylor, I said. What did he do? Sam rubbed his eyes with the heels of his hands.
The firemen think it was petrol. We left crime scene tape all around the house, but the door was broken in, sure, and that window at the back, the one Daniel shot out. Your man just walked through the tape and straight in.
A pillar of fire on the mountainside. Abby and Rafe and Justin alone in grimy interview rooms. Daniel and Lexi on cold steel. Did they save anything?
By the time Byrne spotted it, and then by the time the fire service got there, it's miles from anything.
I know, I said. Somehow I was sitting down on the futon. I could feel the map of Whitethorn House branded on my bones, the shape of the newel post printed in my palm, the curves of Lexi's bedstead down my spine, the slants and turns of the staircase in my feet, my body turned into a shimmering treasure map for a lost island. What Lexi had started, I had finished for her. Between the two of us, we had razed Whitethorn House to rubble and smoking ash. Maybe that was what she had wanted me for, all along.
Anyway, Sam said, I just thought you'd better hear it from me, instead of, I don't know, on the morning news. I know the way you felt about that house.
Even then, there wasn't a spark of bitterness in his voice. But he didn't come to me, and he didn't sit down. He still had his coat on. The others, I said, do they know? For a dizzy second, before I remembered how much they hated me now and how much right they had, I thought, I should tell them. They should hear it from me.
Yeah, I told them. They're not mad about me, but Mackie. I figured I'd better do it. They...
Sam shook his head. The tight twist to one corner of his mouth told me how it had gone.
They'll be all right, he said. Sooner or later.
They don't have families, I said. They don't have friends. Nothing. Where are they staying?
Sam sighed. They're in custody, sure. Conspiracy to commit murder. It won't stick. We've nothing admissible on them unless they talk. And they won't, but... Well, we have to give it a go. Tomorrow, once they're released, victim support will give them a hand finding somewhere to stay.
What about what's-his-name? I asked. I could see the name in my head, but it wouldn't come out. For the fire, did you pull him in yet?
Naylor. Byrne and Doherty went looking for him, but he hasn't shown up yet. No point in chasing after him. He knows those hills like the back of his hand. He'll come home sooner or later. We'll pick him up then.
What a mess, I said. The dim, unfocused yellow light made the flat feel underground, suffocating. What a 5-star, 24-carat, all-out mess.
Yeah, Sam said. Well?
And hitched vaguely at the shoulders of his coat. He was looking past me, at the last stars fading in the window.
She was bad news from the beginning, that girl. It'll all sort itself out in the end, I suppose. I'd better head. I'd to be in early. Have another go at those three for all the good it'll do. I just thought you should know.
Sam, I said. I couldn't stand up. It took all the guts I had left just to hold out my hand to him. Stay. I saw him bite down on the inside of his lip. He still wouldn't meet my eyes.
You should get some sleep too. You must be shattered. And I shouldn't even be here, sure.
I said. I couldn't say to him. When I was sure I was about to be shot, you were what I thought in my last second. I couldn't even say please. All I could do was sit there on the futon with my hands stretched out, not breathing, and hope to God that I hadn't left it too late.
Sam ran a hand over his mouth. I need to know something, he said. Are you transferring back to undercover?
No, I said. Jesus, no, not a chance in hell. This was different, Sam. This was a once-off.
You're a man, Mackie said.
Sam caught himself, shook his head in disgust.